Welcome. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is your Calls One Planet series. In the introduction of a stunning book, The Once and Future Forest, California's Iconic Redwoods, today's guest, Save the Redwoods League President and CEO Sam Hodder writes, quote, "Redwoods are among the most incredible living things in the world. Their forests have stood on this earth for millennia, since long before humans evolved. To walk among them is to experience the incomparable majesty and beauty of the tallest and largest living things. But climate change, rising temperatures, droughts, and logging is putting the forest of these national treasures at risk," end quote. According to Save the Redwoods League, in just the last 2 years, wildfires have killed nearly 20% of the oldest, largest giant sequoias. Last week, more than 130 climate scientists signed a letter urging President Biden to protect old growth forests, which are mostly on federal lands. Scientists asked the president to direct federal land management agencies to adopt regulations that would end the logging of mature forests and large trees. On Earth Day, which was on Friday, President Biden signed an executive order aimed at restoring national forests devastated by wildfires and droughts. The executive order specifically focuses on protecting old-growth forests, including sequoias and redwoods, which are key buffers against climate change. But the president's order does not outlaw the logging of old-growth trees. So what is being done to protect these majestic trees, and how much do scientists know about the impacts of climate change on these invaluable forests? Sam Hodder is president of Save the Redwoods League, a nonprofit that works to protect and restore redwood forests and connect people to their peace and beauty. Since 1918, Save the Redwoods League has protected more than 200,000 acres of redwood forests and helped create 66 redwood parks and preserves. Hi, Sam. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
It's great to have you. Dr. Joanna Nelson is the Director of Science and Conservation Planning at Save the Redwoods League. Hi, Joanna. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hi. Thank you so much, Rose, for having us on your program.
Well, great to have both of you. First off, I'd love for you both to comment on President Biden's executive order. According to the White House, this will create the first ever inventory of old growth forests on federal lands and develop a plan to conserve them. It also addresses deforestation in other countries. First off, Sam, how significant is this?
Well, thanks for that, Rose. First of all, I think it's hugely significant that the administration chose to speak about our forests and particularly our old growth forests on Earth Day, and to highlight the connection that healthy forests play in a resilient planet. So from that perspective, just helping the global audience understand that connection, how urgent good stewardship and healthy forests are to a resilient ecosystem on the planet is hugely important. I've had a chance to read the paper that came out associated with the announcement. And while there's still much more kind of digging to do about the actual implementation, I think an acknowledgement that the federal government through the U.S. Forest Service, the National Park Service, the Bureau of Land Management, Fish and Wildlife Service, other federal agencies that own and manage land are among the most significant stewards of our old growth forests. And in the coast redwood and giant sequoia, I would add to that indigenous communities and tribal nations, California state parks, and other agencies as well. By setting the marker for a commitment to good, healthy stewardship of old growth forests and the younger recovering forests that surround and sustain them, I think the administration is sending a really critical message.
Joanna, what would you add?
I'd just like to emphasize some of what Sam said, that it's really important to see the White House in many arenas supporting indigenous communities and nations in their stewardship role and in this acknowledging the role of old growth forests in particular.
What about the fact that the order does not outlaw the logging of old growth trees? Joanna, what about that?
That's something to look at and that as is in conversation. So it's not easy by definition to replant and regrow forests that might be 1,000 years old, 2,000 years old, 3,000 years old. That's something that scientists in conversation with society are going to have to figure out on how we value those old growth trees. They are irreplaceable, largely. Right?
Sam,
you can be replaced in 3,000 years. That's longer than my lifetime.
Right. That's just, you can't even comprehend that. Sam, what would you add on that one?
Well, I think that was, Joanna made a really good point, and I acknowledge that there have been efforts in the past to put moratoriums on old growth harvest. And each time it was attempted, the pace of that harvest accelerated. And so the impact on the ground after failed attempts was that it actually set us back even further. And perhaps that's the psychology of the commercial interests who own those lands, or there's something else at play. But I will acknowledge that effort has been tried before. And I'll acknowledge that say the Redwoods League approach has always been to acquire through arm's length negotiations, through land transactions, land conservation, to acquire as much as we can of the most critical old growth forest that remains. And now, frankly, we're advancing to the next phase of acquiring as much of the young and second growth redwood forest in strategic places, so that we are buffering the old growth that remains in the context of a healing and growing second growth forest. So that in the redwoods in particular, we're looking at a landscape scale approach to conserving the old growth, not just by protecting the old growth itself, but by protecting the broader forest ecosystem that surrounds and sustains it. I think our organizational approach has always been that the public ownership and protected ownership of our most critical old growth forests is the best way to protect them in the long term, knowing that the politics of the moment will ebb and flow, and it is conservation that is most long lasting.
What is the current status of logging in California?
Oh, well, that is definitely a big question. While I can't speak to all of the forest ecosystems in California, and there is still a lot of commercial forest activity in California outside of the Redwood Range, inside of the Coast Redwood Range, there's about 1 million acres of Coast Redwood Forest that is privately owned and primarily in commercial management of various degrees.
All right. Well, we should go ahead.
I'm sorry, Rose. In the giant sequoia, it's a substantially different story. Close to 99% of the world's remaining giant sequoia that are naturally growing are in public ownership. So there is no viable commercial market for giant sequoia, old growth giant sequoia. And I'll also add, Rose, just in the context of the redwoods to your earlier question about redwood logging, the majority of the coast redwood old growth that remain are in protected ownership. Not all of it, but most of it. And much of what isn't in permanent public ownership is protected either by conservation easement or by constraints related to endangered species. The old growth redwoods are critical habitat for several endangered species, including the marbled murrelet and others. And because of that habitat constraint, because of that regulatory constraint on that endangered species, there are many hurdles to harvesting in old growth today.
Let's just talk about some basic facts. So what does it mean when we say old growth forest? What are the characteristics of an old growth forest? Joanna, do you want to take that first?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. Old growth forests are mature forests with large trees that haven't been logged. And generally we say in the settler historic record of the last 200 years. Characteristics include mature soils and these incredible communities of plants and animals up in the redwood trees themselves. So, for example, you could have mosses, you could have ferns, which you might expect. you can also have salamanders and flowering plants up in the tree itself. So one tree is an incredible community. And then there's a whole forest ecosystem.
Sam, what would you add?
Well, I think that nailed it.
Well, and tell us about how important old growth forests are when we're talking about the climate crisis.
Great. I'd love to keep going with that. So as large, old, mature trees, coast redwood just keep growing, right? So they keep adding material. They keep using sunlight to photosynthesize and create their bodies. And so they're adding more and more carbon and storing that in a form that's out of the atmosphere. So they're really important in a carbon sense. They're really important in the water cycle. So coast redwood, just as a range, go from Monterey County, Big Sur, up to the California-Oregon border, just barely into southern Oregon. And so they're, as their name suggests, coast redwood, they're in this really specific range in this coastal area. They intercept coastal fog and it condenses on their needles in the canopy and then it drips down. Mm. So they're, you know, these trees can't create water, but they can change the form of water into rain for themselves and their forest communities. And again, the mature soils that build with mature forests are really effective as a sponge for water, and that better regulates dry season and wet season flows so that we get consistent water, which human beings really like.
Right. It's just so incredible. What other facts would you like to share with us about these incredible trees?
Thank you. I'll tell you about the range of the other species that we include with redwoods. So the giant sequoia grow only on the western slopes of the Sierra Nevada from about Placer County south to just south of Sequoia Kings Canyon National Park, which is Sequoia National Forest and the Giant Sequoia National Monument. And these are some of the largest trees on the planet by volume. So coast redwoods get the gold star for being the tallest trees. Giant sequoia are the biggest trees. There is, when you read from the foreword of the book, Once in Future Forests, you know, Sam wrote about the majesty. So this beauty and awe and impressive feeling of being in these forests. And then in terms of fire, which we'll touch on more, coast redwood has this fibery reddish colored bark that can be up to a foot thick, right? So from the outside that you can see into the growing wood, that can be a foot in thickness. In the giant sequoia, that can be up to 2 feet thick. And that bark insulates from fire. And throughout scientific history, you know, looking at these trees, that's insulated them from the low and moderate intensity fires that we see, either started by lightning or in more than 10,000 years of indigenous stewardship. Mm. So I'll stop there and ask us any more questions about the many, many amazing things about coast redwoods and giant sequoia.
Sam, what are some other facts you'd like to share?
Well, In particular, I just wanted to put a big old exclamation point on the comments that Joanna was making about the carbon capacity of an old growth forest, to your question of the climate significance of old growth and why they're so important. And for years and years and years, the forest science community believed that old growth forests were static, that they no longer, that they reached a certain point and then stopped growing and stopped adding carbon. In the coast redwood and giant sequoia forest, that couldn't be farther from the truth. The older and the bigger the tree, the more wood it accumulates every year. And if you think about a tree that is 380 feet tall, and the tallest coast redwood tree is 380 feet tall and still growing, and having multiple limbs that are as big as huge trees themselves, and then that entire surface area over that gigantic living thing putting on even just a millimeter of fiber every year across that entire surface area. That is an extraordinary volume of biomass. And in fact, the coast redwood forest sequesters more carbon per acre in an old growth redwood forest than any other ecosystem in the world by a long shot. And that is remarkable at a time when we are struggling with the proliferation of carbon in the atmosphere, that an old growth coast redwood forest sequesters more carbon per acre than any other. By a long shot, the second place finisher doesn't even come close. And you combine that with the really unique resilience of that carbon, and getting to Joanna's point about fire resilience, the coast redwood and giant sequoia have this heartwood that is so resistant to fire and to decay. When an old growth redwood tree falls over, as they occasionally do just by gravity and passage of time and windstorms, in the Amazon rainforest, when a tree falls, it decays within a couple of years. An old growth redwood tree can lie there on the ground, providing habitat and sequestering that carbon for decades, if not centuries. Wow. So that is a stable and resilient carbon sink that is particularly unique in the old growth coast redwood and giant sequoia forest. And as we think about both the climate crisis and the fire crisis that is facing California, and we remember Joanna's comments about the fire resilience of a mature coast redwood forest and the fact that they really have evolved with fire in California's ecosystem across millennia, such that through both indigenous burning and natural fires, the ecosystem of the coast redwood has adapted to sustaining a fire frequency that in some cases is 5 to 10 years. Fire would burn through the coast redwood and giant sequoia forests. And that varies from the northern to the southern end of the range, of course, but having an ecosystem, a mature redwood forest that is resilient to fire and helps keep fire down low and on the ground and from getting catastrophic up into the crowns, that's something important for us to think about as we look at how we help develop a more sustainable landscape for California, a more resilient landscape in the times of both climate and fire crisis.
To your point about older, bigger trees, Mother Jones had a piece called Why Old Growth Forests Matter So Much in the Fight Against Climate Change. And reporter Maddie Oatman writes, one 2020 study on land east of the Cascades in Oregon and Washington found large trees, those greater than 21 inches in diameter, made up only 3% of the total forest, but stored 42% of the carbon. Sam, that's just incredible.
Isn't that amazing?
So amazing.
I've not read that particular study, but it certainly doesn't surprise me. And particularly the lack of that mature, large stature forest. If we talk about how rare old growth coast redwood forest is, it's only 4% of the original range, the original over 2 million acres of the coast redwood forest. We're down to just maybe 120,000 acres of that true old growth. The mature second growth that, as you described, 20 inches plus that, and in the coast redwood, the mature second growth that's in that 100-year-old range, that's even more rare because the forest that's been cut down has been cut down successively. Where in many parts of the coast redwood range, it's already been harvested 3, 4, 5 times. The redwoods have this remarkable ability, again, the coast redwoods, to sprout from their stumps. There are root sprouting species. So when the forest was clear cut, the same redwood tree threw up another stem. Then 40 years later, that one goes down. And then another 40 years later, so successively, most of the coast redwood forest has been harvested multiple times. And yet it still keeps bouncing back.
Wow.
That resilience that is so unique, that genetic ancient tree is still the same tree. It's just a different stem.
Wow. Sam, how long have you been doing this work?
Oh, well, I've been working at the Save the Redwoods League for almost 9 years now.
And just working on trees in general, how long?
Well, before Save the Redwoods League, I was working in land conservation across ecosystems, but for about 20 years before that. So wow. I've been in land conservation for just about 30 years.
What about you, Joanna? How long have you been doing this kind of work?
Really similar time frame. So I just joined Save the Redwoods League, for example, last year in July, and I've been doing conservation and climate action work for 30 years.
Oh my goodness. Well, thank you both for your work. I ask because hearing you both talk about trees, it must be, I mean, what a time we're living in right now with so much information out. Because while you were talking, Sam, I was just thinking about all these articles that have come out over the past couple years about trees talking to each other. I just searched trees talking to each other. I got so many headlines. So what has this experience been like for you, given that there's just so much more information out today about trees and how important they are on so many levels?
Well, that's a great question, Rose, and I will say that the connection between humans and forests has gone back throughout human history, and the appreciation of forests and the role that they play in our lives is storied, but there does seem to be a growing recognition of the role that forests and trees play in our lives, and a fascination with the science that Joanna can speak to so well, of the dynamics of forests, of the power of forests, and what we learn as we study about just how remarkable they are. There is definitely the sense that something about what we've been going through collectively as a community, whether it be the last 2 years of the pandemic crisis, whether it be the social justice with George Floyd in recent years, whether it be the political crisis that has all combined to create this sense of strain and anxiety and uncertainty, the sense of permanence, of longevity, of resilience that's reflected in our forest has brought kind of new meaning to conservation. Certainly what we do, we feel it. Joanna and I and our colleagues at both the staff and the broader the community that supports our work just feel directly this sense of significance of the forest that we're working to protect. And I think it goes beyond that. There's, again, a sense of resilience, of hope, of agency that is associated with the need to be good stewards of this forest landscape, to spend time in the woods, and to connect with nature and each other in that way.
Mm, beautifully said, and huge thanks and respect for the work you do. Joanna, what would you add?
Again, I'd appreciate what Sam just summarized and add. Really interesting that you did that search on trees talking to each other. I recently read Dr. Suzanne Simard's book, Finding the Mother Tree, Discovering the Wisdom of the Forest, and really appreciate, she looks at the fungal, so we would say mushrooms, the fungal networks under the soil and how trees are sharing resources. And just bringing that forward as one example of science that lets us change how we think. So if we take the one axis only of competition, which is embedded in our policies, and in her case, in Canada's policies of, if you want commercial trees, you would cut out everything else and treat it like a weed, right? There can't be anything else competing for water and sunlight. And so just to overturn that and say, oh, that's not how forest communities work. So they can recognize their relatives and share resources disproportionately with little starts, you know, little new seedlings. And so just, again, this community nature and some of the holistic ways at looking at forests that Indigenous scientists have been asking us to see and hear.
Oh my gosh. I love how you just described that, the little sharing with the little seeds.
Thank you.
Really, amazing. And I'm just so glad we have an hour to actually talk about these issues. Today, we are talking about what is being done to protect these majestic trees. And we're talking with Dr. Joanna Nelson, Director of Science and Conservation Planning at Save the Redwoods League, a nonprofit that works to protect and restore redwood forests and connect people to their peace and beauty. Since 1918, Save the Redwoods League has protected more than 200,000 acres of redwood forest and helped create 66 redwood parks and preserves. Sam Hodder is president of Save the Redwoods League. And I hope you can check out yourcallradio.org for a number of resources. Be sure to check out the stunning book, The Once and Future Forest, California's Iconic Redwoods. This is Your Calls One Planet series, and we'll be back after this. This is Your Calls One Planet series. I'm Rose Aguilar. Tomorrow, we will discuss Black Mothers Love and Resist, a new documentary about the mothers of young Black men victimized and killed by police brutality, who come together and build a network of community-led support, mutual aid, and healing. And we hope you can join us for that show. If you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can email yourcall@kalw.org. Today, we are talking about the incredible coastal redwood forests and giant sequoias. What is being done to save them, and how are they being affected by the climate crisis? If you have a question or comment for our guests, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Also, if you just have a story about how you've been affected by these incredible trees and these forests, we'd love to hear from you. We are so lucky to live near these amazing forests. We're joined today by Sam Hodder, president of Save the Redwoods League. Dr. Joanna Nelson is director of science and conservation planning at Save the Redwoods League. And I hope you can check out their beautiful book, The Once and Future Forest, California's Iconic Redwoods. We have an email from Robert who writes, I hike in Oakland's Redwood Regional Park, where all the old growth redwoods were cut down. Is it true that the current trees growing in family circles, sprouting around the footprint of the original trees, are actually the same continuous ancient living beings? Joanna, do you want to take that?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. And I'm really happy people are enjoying Redwood Regional Park. So to answer Robert's question, yes, coast redwoods have the ability to reseed. So they have cones with seeds in them. And they also have the second ability to resprout. So Sam mentioned this. So if a tree is cut down or burned, you'll see these new bright green sprouts coming out from the edge. And there's more inquiry that scientists are doing of, are these all genetically the same individual? But basically what we know now is yes, that stump sent out sprouts that are not reproduction via seeds. They're a clone of that original stump. So that is an exciting part of Robert's hike.
Do you have anything to add, Sam?
Only that that's my favorite local park as well.
I spend a lot of time in that park, and I'm constantly amazed by exactly that. It's amazing to think that the trees in that forest helped to build the cities of Oakland and Berkeley. And yet the young forest that is grown up in the place of those ancient giants still inspires thousands of visitors from Oakland, Berkeley, and from all over the region. And to think that those incredible trees, and some of them are huge and really impressive. It's a beautiful forest in Reinhart Redwood Regional and adjacent Joaquin Miller in the city of Oakland. And just thinking conceptually about what Joanna just described is when a tree will fall over or be a victim of a windstorm or a lightning strike or a burn, and then, or be cut down, and then the stems will grow up and replace them and grow to be giants themselves. And how many times does that happen? And has that happened throughout history? And even the ancient giants that we walk among in the old growth groves today, that I think the oldest giant, the oldest coast redwood is much over 2,000 years old. It might be a successive generation of another 2,000-year-old tree that in itself was a clone of the tree that came before it. And so while the stem might be 2,000 years old, the plant itself could be tens of thousands of years old. There's no way for us to know that for sure and to trace it all back, but it just is mind-bending to think about how this species has thrown up stem after stem across millennia.
It is so incredible. Before we talk about fires, another question to ask, what about the ecosystem that develops around and under these trees? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, we'll start with coast redwood. And again, this ecosystem is generally really moist. So again, that's what coast redwoods need and also what they're part of generating with this fog drip. You'll have red-bellied newts, you'll have flowering plants in the understory. There's one called oxalis. And one thing I'm coming to learn more about, we know very little about native pollinators in the understory of the redwoods. So there's this incredibly rich ecosystem that people see and track, and then there's always more to learn. And then I'll switch to the giant sequoia, which are, we identify groves and put a boundary on them as people. We say, this is a giant sequoia grove. And they're also part of mixed conifer ecosystems. So pine and fir trees, for example, that's really important for wildlife habitat in this western slope of the Sierra Nevada. And I'll just add this fact to come back to it later. For fire, giant sequoia can grow from seeds. They don't have that same ability to resprout that coast redwood had. And so that affects their ability to bounce back and respond after wildfire or other events.
Well, we have a couple more callers on the line. So let's go first to Yon calling from the woods near Santa Cruz. Hi, Yon. Welcome to the show.
Hi. I'm up here in beautiful woods in Poganib Park, and I have a redwood circle about, I'd say 75 feet from my camp. And,
lucky you.
I'm not lucky. It's all, I teach nature and survival, and I'm building a facility where people can learn that and free family camping in exchange for work and all kinds of activities. And right now I'm using a grass whip to cut my grass, which is six different native species, on a volleyball court, full-size volleyball court. Anyway, I wanted to mention a book, Science Comics. They have about 20 titles, but the one on trees is exceptional, absolutely exceptional. And it's the stuff that you can read if you're junior high school level reading, but it's entertaining, it's gripping, and it's done extremely cleverly. And then I wanted to mention, in Santa Cruz, Atlantis Fantasy World has those comics.
And what are they called?
Pardon?
What are they called?
Science comic books.
Science comic books. Okay. Thank you for that.
Yeah, and they have about 15, at least 15 titles, and so far it's great stuff. Very entertaining, different styles. And the other thing I want to mention, because I've been in construction all my life and I use all kinds of woods, and when I'm doing something like exterior trim, I get the best grade of redwood I can, which is not easy to do. But I was looking at a piece of redwood that was second growth, and the growth rings in harvested, and the growth rings are about quarter to 3/8 inch apart. And somebody gave me a piece of wood off the side of the mountain up there on Mount Hermon, where there's not much sunlight, tough growing conditions, and I counted 75 growth rings within a 1-inch space.
Wow. Well, thank you so much, Yon, for calling. And the science comic book recommendation is great. We might do a show about that. Let's go next to David in Oakland. Hi, David. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, hi, thank you. I'm wondering about your guest's opinion on carbon offsets and carbon credit programs in the light of, I'm a landowner, and I'm looking at my redwood trees that are 100 years old now, and I could cut them down and sell them for big money, but I can't get any money for letting them grow. Now, I know I've looked into it a little bit about programs, but they've all seemed to have failed. But it seems like here I'm looking at 100-year-old redwood trees that I could sell right now, but I can't get any money for letting them grow. And that's a lot of, it takes money to maintain property tax, there's road fees, there's insurance, there's all this stuff. I'm sort of hoping that someday there'll be a program that I can just let my tree grow and get a certain amount of income from their carbon sequestration. So I'm just wondering what your guests have to say about this.
Sam, any comment on that?
Sure, and thank you for the question. And I'll try and stay fairly high altitude, just because the dynamics of the carbon market are so complex. We probably need a whole show just for that. But it is a really good question, and it's a very interesting incentive to put on the table or put in the toolbox of our conservation resources to help do what we can to protect the forest and manage it for climate and fire resilience. I think that there is a carbon market, there is a mechanism in California through the Air Resources Board to register a timber property as secure and then sell carbon credits through California's cap and trade system. But it does require a certain acreage, a certain volume to make it worthwhile, because the cost of doing the assessments and advancing a project, as the caller noted, is pretty extraordinary. And the price for those carbon credits doesn't come near to the value that landowner might be able to secure through harvest. So while it is there as an alternative, it's not an alternative incentive from a commercial standpoint to really turn the dial on a forest manager's decision making on whether to cut or whether to let it grow and sequester the carbon. So it's an interesting, we're still in early years. While the program has been in place for more than a decade, there's still a lot of learning and evolution to advance. There's been some very interesting dialogue across the public discourse about how carbon markets could offer another resource for conservation and to accelerate the pace and scale of that conservation by giving landowners an alternative.
All right. Well, thank you for that call. Let's talk for a minute about the fires. I mean, last year was devastating. Unfortunately, we're expecting more this year. It's just horrific to see what's happening right now in New Mexico. Colorado had horrible fires a few months ago. California is bracing for horrific fires again. And according to your website, just in the last 2 years, wildfires have killed nearly 20% of the oldest, largest giant sequoias. This is shocking research. And I have to say, Joanna, you know, seeing the photos is horrific, and then driving to these places after the fact is absolutely horrific. What are your overall thoughts about, well, what does the science say about how fires are affecting these trees and these forests?
Thank you. That's a great question. So one major headline from the science is these trees are being impacted, and really they're being killed to an extent that we've never seen before. So I mentioned the resilience to low and moderate severity fire, and the fire throughout the evolutionary history, and that giant sequoia in particular, different than coast redwood, they need fire to reproduce. So both for their cones to open in the heat and release seed, and those seeds germinate best on bare mineral soil where that woody needles and duff have been burned away. So there's a reliance on fire And then in particular, in the last almost 7 years since a fire in 2015 called the Rough Fire, we've seen an exponential uptick in area burns and in severity of fire. And severity in California usually is measured by how much of the canopy of trees is burned. So this is really, there's this uptick that I mentioned since 2015, and then with the 2020 Castle Fire and the 2021 two fires together, the Canopy Complex and the Windy, together there's an estimate that those burned 19% of all the giant sequoia on the planet. Right. And we add that on the planet because that's where coast redwood and giant sequoia grow, is in California in these distinct ranges.
Sam, what would you add about how the fires have affected the trees and the forest? And what are your thoughts about what we're expecting this year?
Well, it has
been a wake up call. That is for sure for all of us. And the scientists that have been operating in the Sierra and monitoring the proliferation of fuels as a result of past policies of fire suppression. And again, just to take a step back, policy from the federal government and others for the past nearly 160 years has been to put out forest fires on landscapes that have been burned through both natural fires and indigenous burning across millennia. And once that policy of suppressing fire took hold, what happened was that the biology, the life that would otherwise be suppressed by these frequent fires is allowed to grow up to maturity. And there's a density of biomass in these forests that is completely unnatural. And when fire comes through that forest, instead of the low to moderate intensity fire that Joanna was mentioning, you get these catastrophic fires that grow into the crowns that kill giant sequoia. So we have a crisis situation. We have an existential moment facing the giant sequoia forest. To lose 19% in just 3 years it should be all we need. And hopefully what you mentioned at the beginning of the show, Rose, the commitment to old growth forests out of the administration is one critical ingredient in finding solutions to accelerate the pace of forest management in these forests, to reduce the fuel load and reintroduce naturally fire frequency that to which this ecosystem has grown accustomed across millennia. So we have an urgent moment. We have a critical crisis to try and bring investment and capacity, boots on the ground, collaboration across across giant sequoia stewards from the Tule River Tribe through the National Park Service, U.S. Forest Service, Cal Fire, State Parks, Save the Redwoods League, and who all own and manage giant sequoia groves. We've come together, I'm proud to say, through the Sequoia Lands Coalition to work to accelerate our learning, really understanding where the risks are greatest, to rally, to bring our community together around addressing this challenge, and to act, to get out on the ground and to manage the fuel loads in the highest risk sequoia groves so that we are able to restore some of that natural fire resilience on the landscape and make sure we don't have another crisis year like in years past. I mean, to specifically answer your question, Rose, and I'm sorry to wander towards solutions.
No, but, please.
To specifically answer your question, we have no reason to believe that this coming year is going to be any different. We know that there are parts of the giant sequoia forest that were lucky enough to be spared from the last 3 years of fire, but have the same crisis of fuel over fuel loads that put them at risk. We know from the repeated fires of the last couple of years that this wasn't a one-off. 2015 wasn't a one-off. 17 wasn't a one-off. Last year certainly wasn't either. This is a trend. This is our new normal. And so knowing that fire season is no longer a season. It's a year, as we've all seen, with fires burning throughout California for the past several weeks even, that there is an urgent need to get these forests ready for this new reality.
No, it's so important. And that's why we dedicate every single Monday to talking about something related to the climate crisis. I also wanted to ask you about the Land Back movement. We invited the intertribal, is it Sinkyon?
Yep.
Thank you. Sinkyon Wilderness Council to join us, but they were not available today, and we hope to have them in the near future. In January, more than 500 acres of redwood forest was returned to the Intertribal Sinkyon Wilderness Council. This is a group comprising 10 tribes who have lived on the land for thousands of years. Can you both talk about how this all happened? How were these forests returned to the tribe? And of course, we'll have them back to ask them what that means to them. But, you know, why this is such an important issue. This is getting so much more attention now. Sam, do you want to take that first?
Sure, Rose. And thank you for calling out that project. And thank you also for saying that you're reaching out to the tribe themselves to bring them on to hear from their words the story of this project. It is an inspiring one. It is, frankly, critical to the long-term success of the conservation movement to engage tribal communities in this way. So the project, it is, the name for the property is Tchiledon, which is Sinkyon for Fish Run Place. It is a 500-plus acre property with some substantial old growth coast redwood and mature second growth, significant stream frontage on salmon bearing streams. And it is kind of in the heart of the Lost Coast, which is that extraordinary wild landscape, wild and rugged, that goes, it's 60 miles of virtually unroded coastline in northern Mendocino and southern Humboldt counties. It is a spectacular landscape. And as you said in posing your question, it's been stewarded and the home to indigenous communities across millennia. Say the Redwoods League bought the property last year. It had been owned by the Andersonia family, who was been a logging family in the region across the decades. Say the Redwoods League acquired the property. And then last year, we were able to convey it to the Intertribal Sinkyon Wilderness Council. And you explained it so well, Rose. That council is a consortium of 10 federally recognized tribes from this broad Sinkyon region. And the council then shared with Save the Redwoods League a conservation easement. So together we are supporting the council and its member tribes in the long-term stewardship and restoration of this property, and its conservation is assured in perpetuity. And it is remarkable to return this beautiful landscape to indigenous stewardship.
And this is so important. Just to give people a little bit of history, according to the Smithsonian Magazine, I'm just reading from a piece about this. White settlers arrived in the 1800s and decimated the Sinkyon population through state-sanctioned murders, starvation, diseases, and other atrocities. Survivors were exiled, and some became members of federally recognized tribes. Settlers extensively logged redwoods, which tribes consider relatives and sacred beings. Now, from southern Oregon to central California, only 5% of the original old-growth forest remains. And I'll just read a comment about this project from Priscilla Hunter, chair of the Sinkyon Council and a tribal citizen of the Coyote Valley Band of Pomo Indians. Priscilla Hunter told KQED, quote, "Our relatives and our ancestors are happy and can be at peace because this is where our ancestors were forced off their land and had to run away from either being killed or taken away. I believe their spirits and our spirits are connected together today in a happy time," end quote. And we will definitely invite people who are connected and directly affected by all of this. This is so important, Joanna. Your final thoughts on this. I just took a deep breath because my great-grandmother was a member of this tribe. So there's so much history to share. And the work that you did returning this land to the tribe is just so incredibly important.
Thank you so much, Rose. And I'll take a deep breath with you and think about your great-grandmother. Yeah, there's really so much more activity and awareness right now about what was not only displacement, so that's a euphemism, but genocide. And many California tribes who say the genocide isn't over, it's still continuing today, in terms of the barriers to our cultural practice or our land access. So being part of equitable collaborations and conversations and actions is really important to us at the League. And it has really clear benefits, right? It's not a mercenary form of like, well, you have to do it right. And that's who takes the best care of biodiversity globally, are the indigenous stewards.
In the book, The Once and Future Forest, California's Iconic Redwoods by Save the Redwoods League, we see this really incredible photo, the largest remaining grove of ancient redwoods in the Sinkione Wilderness State Park, rescued from logging in the 1980s, was named in honor of Sally Bell, pictured here in 1923, a Sinkione woman who survived the 1850s Needle Rock massacre at the age of 10. Really amazing photo in history. Again, huge thanks and respect to both of you and everyone at Save the Redwoods League for your great work. Sam Hodder is president of Save the Redwoods League, and Dr. Joanna Nelson is director of science and conservation planning at Save the Redwoods League. Sam and Joanna, thank you so much, and we'd love to have you back.
Thank you, Rose, and we look forward to it.
Thank you so much, and thank you for dedicating an hour here. And we'd love to invite listeners to see our website, savetheredwoods.org, as you want to learn more or meet other communities of people.
Thank you so much. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.